Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Designated Pundits. Today, we're recapping Match Day 9, Major League Soccer. We got all the biggest stories. We got a lot to talk about. Sit right down. It's the Designated Pundits. Trying some new intros, just spitballing here. I don't think that worked.
It wasn't that bad.
Tons of people are driving in their cars like, did that guy just tell me to sit down? I don't know. We're here with Scott. We're here with Alex. How are you gentlemen doing today?
It's good. How are you?
I'm back.
You're back.
I had some chaperoning duties on a sixth grade camping trip with 80 of my closest 11-year-old friends. So I'm happy to be back in civilization. We had a great week of soccer. One of the things that I found really weird, so I separate my notes by two separate pages. Mm-hmm. The first seven games, 3-3-1 for the home teams. The last seven games, 1-2-4 record of home teams. One win, two draws, four losses. MLS After Dark was surely upon us last week. A lot of really strange results, a lot of strange things going on there. So I'm really happy to be here to talk about just a few of them. Alex, how are you doing tonight?
What shirt you have? Pretty good. We are sporting the New York Arrows. MISL power of the late 70s and early 80s, the old major indoor soccer league.
Fantastic. Welcome back. How you doing today?
Great, Bob. You just asked me that question. I can answer that and go ahead. I'm doing fantastic, Bob. I'm wearing a New York Arrows shirt for the major indoor soccer league from the late 70s and 80s.
On cue. These things happen. Okay. Let's get into some action and let's start off with the LA Galaxy 3-1 win at Vancouver. Goals from Jovicic, Paintsill, and Fagundes. Gentlemen, what did we see there as the LA Galaxy beat the Vancouver Whitecaps, a Vancouver team that I thought was going to be quite good this season? To me, I think they still are. I think they're still good at home. I just think LA Galaxy is the team to beat in the West this year. 58.3% possession, 5 of 12 shots on target, 2 expected goals, 3 actual goals, Paintsill with a goal and an assist. I like it.
It was good. I think LA did a great job at taking their opportunities, especially, which is what this team needs to do. They're still not especially great defensively. Vancouver created a lot of chances. They're a team that's usually really efficient, and they kind of weren't in this game, very un-Vancouver-like. But the Galaxy took advantage. That's sometimes a thing that you just have to do when you're a top team. And now they are top of the West.
Yeah, I love it. They are top of the West with 4 wins, 3 draws, and 1 loss. 17 goals for, 12 goals against. That is the most goals scored in Major League Soccer minus Inter Miami. 12 goals against, that can be improved upon, but the plus 5 goal differential is just enough to keep them their heads above water.
Yeah, and actually, this one thing I kind of didn't notice, but this was a game against number 1 and number 2 in the West. This was to decide who's going to be top of the table. Early days, and the LA Galaxy, I think, took it pretty convincingly. Alex, I don't know if you feel any different about it.
I was kind of surprised how Vancouver, not laid down, but the outcome of this game, 3-1, I thought it would be a closer game to me. Joseph Paintsill, maybe we should start talking about an MVP candidate kind of early. What he brings to LA Galaxy is just excitement, a threat offensively. He's been something fantastic for them. I mean, to me, he's almost like right now, they'll go as far as he goes almost. That's what it seems like. Not what Ricky Pujol do, not what Jovalich do. It's what Joseph Paintsill is doing down the right-hand side. To me, he's incredible. I've talked about him a couple times. I love what I've seen about him right now. LA Galaxy, we were talking about this. They're much-watched TV. They're high-flying, high-scoring. Again, this game, 3 goals again, they scored. Fantastic job by LA Galaxy.
Also in the early slate, Portland 2-2 draw versus LAFC. And we want to talk about Bogush, who scored 2 goals in this match. The first one was just a pretty ordinary run of play. Set piece. Let's take a look at what we see here. Bogush taking a set piece right on the top of the box, up and down over the box. We talked about this beforehand. I thought he missed the wall, but it appears as though he brought that up and down. That is not where the goalie was. He caught him on the wrong side. The team celebrates. Guys, Bogush finally 2 goals. Not the most reliable striker so far this season. He needs to step up if the team's going to do it. It can't be Buanga on his own. Oliveira has been pretty good so far this season, but they need that number 9. Bogush.
They do need Bogut to be more consistent. It's a really good sign for LAFC that he comes in and he gets the double. That's a big double for them. That's might be an important point down the road. We'll see. I think they'll be a little disappointed that they didn't get another goal. Maxime Crépeau gets a red card in the 48th minute. It's that red card that leads directly to this goal. I just think, look, you have an entire half basically up a man. If you're LAFC, you got to go out and win that game. Portland's defense is still not especially good. They still concede a lot of goals. For LAFC to not go get that third goal and win the game, that's got to be a little disappointing.
There was a lot of that this week. There was a lot of that this week, but you're on the road. You face Portland. If you said at the beginning of the match that this was going to be a draw, I'd say that's an LAFC win. They haven't been the best this season. This isn't the LAFC team that we've come to expect year in and year out. So I you're right. They should be disappointed that they couldn't find that third goal. But if you said pre-match LAFC can walk away with a draw, I think everyone in LA is happy with that scenario.
I mean, it's that kind of thing. If you offer it to them beforehand, they're like, yeah, great, I'll take it. But then after seeing it play out, they have to feel like they didn't get enough. That game has to leave them feeling hungry, like they should have done better, because they dominated that game. From the moment the red card is on, they have the run of play, they have the run of possession, they're the ones creating chances. 16 total shots, only 4 on target. For me, it's Denny Bouanga not performing up to his, standards. Oliveira not getting it done in this game. Bogut doing the double, but there's got to be one more. This team they're still underperforming what they should be doing, what they are doing on the field, and they're not getting the results.
Don't forget, Olivier Giroud is on their way to LAFC. They'll be getting someone else also in the summer transfer, though. And I'd like to talk about, before we move on to next, Portland, Antony and Evander. Those two guys, not a lot of people are talking about. They're very exciting to watch. One thing we like from Portland every week, they can score a lot and they give up a lot. I mean, Bob, I don't know, you would know better than me, but I think it's looking at taking overs with any game involving Portland right now might be a good bet going forward, because it seems like every week, 3-2, 2-2, 4-1, whatever it is, it's multiple goals, on either side of the ball, giving up and scoring. Antony and Evander really, really look like they're clicking right now for Portland. Something to look forward to going forward.
Love it. Let's talk about another high-scoring game, and that's Sporting KC hosting Inter Miami. What we saw here, 72,610 people in attendance at the stadium there, and Sporting Kansas City was kind of in a bad place going into this game because they came out kicking against Portland last week. They scored 3 in the first half, conceded 3 in the second half. 6 total goals, did not get the result. So Sporting KC was a little bit down. Very oddly, the previous week, we saw Sporting KC's media team seem to care more about Lionel Messi than they cared about their own team. Just kind of gassing him up every chance they get. And I kind of saw the writing on the wall here. Let's see what my pick was from last week.
I don't think they're capable of keeping goals out. I think they have to go try and put goals in. I think there's going to be plenty of opportunity for Kansas City to do it. So I see this game being a high-scoring, dramatic event.
So, yeah, my face looks a little different there because that was actually Scott's clip. But my pick from my article was over 3.5 goals. That was easily hit. There were 5 total goals in this match. And again, Sporting KC cannot hold on. They cannot close out a match. Gave up goals to Messi, Gomez, Suarez, everyone who, we wanted to be involved was. Messi with a goal and an assist. Gomez with a goal and an assist. The game at Chiefs Stadium really put on quite a show, and Inter Miami walks away with an away victory, a much needed away victory against a very high powered offense there in Sporting KC in this one. On Sporting KC's side, you had Tommy with 2 goals on 2 shots. Agata went 1-for-4. You had Labeled with an assist. Possession was just about even. Chances were just about even. Inter Miami has the better day.
Tommy with absolute bangers, though. Wow. I mean, I'm sorry for him to have to lose that game, but boy, those are going to be on his end of season highlight reel. Those were beautiful.
Love it. Alex, any thoughts on Inter Miami here with Messi, 72,000 people in attendance?
Yeah, the last time I think a game was played, the Tomiola was in goal for the Kansas City Wizards, I do believe, and Preki was parading around on that stadium. Yeah, 72,000, nothing to laugh about MLS attendance wise being the third most attended weekend in MLS history. I had a lot to do with the 72,000, but looks like attendance is up. Messi is around, so MLS should be in pretty good shape. I understand you know, Sporty Kenzie, every time I look at Peter Vermes, looks like he's about to kill somebody in this game. No different. Yeah, I don't know. Sporty Kansas City's bleeding goals are, and I don't like it at all. If I'm a Sporty Kansas City fan, I got to be a little nervous. Defensively, look pretty, pretty weak in the back.
Yeah. This SKC team, there's something going on. They kind of did this last year, too. At the beginning of the season, last year, they were terrible. This year, they just seem a little more naive, giving up leads, dropping points that is very uncharacteristic of a Peter Vermes.
Six goals, two given up at home, back to back total in the last 2 weeks. Six goals in 2 weeks. That's you're not going to win any games doing that.
Not going to win many games. Although, to be fair, they're doing that to teams with high powered offense, right? Let's see what happens when they play a run of the mill and a run of the mill offense. These are, they did it against Portland, but Portland's offense, as we have just talked about, they are good. Evander, he is absolutely clicking. He's at the heart of a lot of good things. They did it to Miami. Messi was back. This Miami team was hungry. They know they need to win games like this when they have their, best players on the field. They, before this, they hadn't won for a month. That's something we talked about last week or in our last, preview pod. They were hungry. And so, yeah, is SKC, is this disappointing? Is this bad for SKC? Yes, but context. It's not like they're doing it to San Jose or Austin yet.
Yet.
And I don't know. It might happen. I won't say it won't happen, but
one thing I do want to look ahead for Inter Miami, and we had to kind of talk about their form. Now, we've talked about them like they've been missing games and playing terrible soccer. 4 wins, 3 draws, 2 losses. Now, they do have a game in hand, but they are currently 15 points tied with New York Red Bull at the top of the Eastern Conference table. So, yeah, they're disappointing us and still being in first place. So I think that does change when the other teams catch up a match. But when you look ahead to Inter Miami's schedule, they host Nashville next. They're going to beat Nashville. They might beat Nashville by 4 goals.
Yeah.
They head to New England. They can beat New England. Then they host New York Red Bull. That's going to be a good match. Then they go to Montreal. They should beat Montreal. They go to Orlando. That's going to be a great game, but I think they can beat Orlando. This team is in for a nice little stretch where they're going to expect some results. They couldn't do it at home against NYCFC. They couldn't do it at home against Colorado. We know what happened there. They were missing players. They were missing the best player on planet Earth. That's not going to continue for long. And when we settle into this schedule, now there's not a lot of competitions going on right now. I think they have a little chance to go on a run.
Yeah, Alex has talked about this a lot. This is a team that at the end of the season is not going to be, really in the supporter shield race. But that's because they are going to have periods where Messi is not available, where Suarez is not available, where Busquets or Alba are not available, either through injury or through rest and rotation, or for some of them through, national team call-up. They've got other guys on that roster who will get called up, Robert Taylor, for example. They are going to drop points during those periods. And so for these, little bits where they have everybody available, everybody's healthy, they aren't really doing anything else, the Champions Cup is over for them, they have got to capitalize on these games to make sure that they're in a comfortable spot come the end of this. And I think they know that. And I think Tata Martino knows that. And so they're going to throw everything at kind of these games, knowing full well that sometime later in the summer, those guys won't be available and they'll drop points.
Love it there. Let's talk about another team that's been dropping points recently. That's Atlanta United. 2-2 draw with Philadelphia this past week, but they went into the game. Giakoumakis is out. He's got a knee. Well, that's fine because they have a great new young striker. He's not young. He's 31 years old. Jamal Tiari. Well, he's out with a hamstring. So they're going like third on the depth chart, fourth on the depth chart to get someone to play the center forward position. It's Danny Rios. And it turns out that was kind of enough to put 2 goals on. I thought this was going to be a draw or a bad game in the 1-1 nil-nil scenario. It was not. It was a 2-2 game. It was pretty good. They should have kept Philly out of it. Again, very disappointing. A lot of very disappointing matches this past week. We got to watch this one on Sunday with nothing else to do because, it's the primetime game, the game you get to watch. Atlanta went up 2-0. Sure enough, Ura, Wagner, 73rd and 77th minute. There's a 4-minute stretch where Philadelphia Union takes control, then they were able to put the game away.
Well, now Giakoumakis, Atlanta's threat up front is doesn't scare many teams. Yes, Rio scored. Yes, the 31-year-old rookie. What's his name again, Bob? Thierry. I love when you pronounce Thierry. It. Same. Yeah, you got that. Nice job, Bob. He wasn't there either. You know, I know Mata is a difference maker, but without Giakoumakis up front, Atlanta, to me, is not the same team. Until he comes back, you know, I can't really take Atlanta more often than not without Giakoumakis, especially at home. I love Giakoumakis, the way what he brings to Atlanta. When he's not there, Atlanta's not the same team. Again, Philadelphia, the last undefeated team left. I know they got a bunch of draws. I think what they 3-0-4, something like that right now. The last undefeated team. To me, something, and also, let's talk about Philly. Something's missing in Philly. They're not the same team to me as they were the last couple of years. They were more dominant with that press. I don't know what, there's something's missing. I don't know what you guys think. They're not the same high pressing. I don't know, it's the same names over and over again. Ura and, you know, with Jim Curtin over there. Carranza. Something to me, I don't know, is off for to me. I don't know if it's stale, the same roster over year in, year out. Philadelphia really hasn't added somebody else, but. You know, getting a draw, I guess, in Atlanta is a good job without Giakoumakis. I think for Philadelphia, three wins, no losses, four ties on the only undefeated team left. Sounds like they're really doing good, but to me, something's missing with Philadelphia. I don't know what you guys think.
I agree on a lot of those points. I think Atlanta, yeah, not quite as good without Giakoumakis. He's clearly the better
difference
striker.
Maker.
Very total much. Difference he's maker. Got yeah. total X factor, good at all the things. But I rate Rios. I think that's a guy who Atlanta are really going to be able to rely on. And I think they're just deep in that striker position. They've got guys in there that can come in and do things for them if Giakoumakis needs a rest, if they need to make a sub, or like this when Giakoumakis is out. For Atlanta to score two at home should be enough. But it's Philly. There's this weird resiliency about them. They're not good enough most of the game. They're kind of too soft. They give up chances. They let teams go up on them by one or two goals. And then they turn it on and they fight back and they are pulling out these draws kind of out of nowhere that they have no business drawing. They really have no business getting anything out of this game, but they do. It's impressive in the like mental resiliency. I wonder how much of a, you know, tax and a toll it takes on them to have to do this every week. I
agree with that point, and I think something's got to give. They're either going to get better or they're going to get worse. You can't tie every match, and I'm not really sure which side I have my money on. They put a lot into just running it back this year, not making any big changes, not making a big splash, and it hasn't worked out so far. I mean, obviously they're still in it, but this is not a title winning team. This is not a team that I'm excited to watch ever.
No, we talked about a couple weeks ago, we talked about style points. We want Philly to have some more style points. They're the last undefeated team, and you're like,
That's all you need to know about.
A lot of other teams that I favor more than them right now in a lot of other ways. And that's a bad thing to say about an undefeated. Like, it's kind of disappointing.
I agree. Okay, let's move on, though, because I do want to pick some more spots where I thought they were right. I actually have a clip of myself speaking, and I want to move to that game now. Colorado 3-0. They won at San Jose. Colorado Rapids to win was plus 230, minus 150 for Rapids and the draw. San Jose is bad. They're playing bad soccer. They actually had 58.6% of possession, but only 6 of their 24 shots were on target. They did have a 2+2 expected goals. Actual goals were 0. Colorado Rapids, 41.4% possession, 3 of 16 shooting with 3 expected goals and 3 goals. Navarro, 2 goals and an assist, had the game on, had the match ball. I don't know. Right. Listen to the clip. Listen to me talk.
Bob's pick is Colorado.
Still not me.
Bob's pick is Colorado Rapids or draw minus 150. Bob says it's a tough bet to make at minus 150, but there's no team easier to pick on right now than the San Jose Earthquakes.
My brilliant words sound even better coming out of your mouth, Scott, I have to say.
I'm happy to share your words with the wider public. You're absolutely right, though. Absolutely right about this game. I didn't really think so. I didn't think this would play out this way. I still kind of think the San Jose team is more competitive than the results, but boy, they got rolled in this way in the weirdest way. Because they actually, in a lot of ways, outperformed. Colorado. Their expected goal is a lot higher, but they just couldn't do
it. Yeah, and you know, I was kind of brought in by our guest who gave us both teams to score. I bought into that, and it kept me up all night. I was watching San Jose till the very end. The goal did not come. I was hoping it would. It was looking really good at the end there, but that was not to be. So kind of a mixed result there. We'll take that as a win because, you know, why not? Let's move on. Last game I want to talk about here today is where we were wrong. Charlotte against Toronto is a game that I had the game script completely busted on. These were two of the least clinical teams heading into this match. Charlotte is a player I like to pick on all the time. I picked under 2.5 goals. The total was 5. The total was 5. Let's see how one of those goals was scored. Vargas, here you have a ball that's headed down by Capetti. I'm not really sure if that was intentional, but it lands at the top of the box. Vargas did not have a good body shape, did not look like a great attempt, but it gets past the goalie. I guess that's what matters. You want some style points? There's some style points on the backflip on the end, Scott.
Ooh, big style points. Big style points. I really insisted that we put this clip in the show today because we took shots at Vargas. Bob especially led that one, but we all jumped on board. I jumped on board. This is a good finish. It's an instinctual finish. He doesn't overthink it. He just goes in, he hits it. He's all sorts of off balance. It's all sorts of difficult. He's outside the box, but it's pretty much perfect. It's inside that near post. It is a good finish. And Charlotte, who've had trouble scoring, they made it look easy in this game. I got to say, but this game, they did make it hard on themselves. They really did let Toronto, you know, stay in it until late. Until very, very late. Entertaining game. Interesting one from a Toronto perspective. Alex, I don't know if you think this was an interesting game at all.
It was okay. You know, I liked Charlotte straight up in this game. I talked about it last week. I liked, especially when they play at home, I'm more often to pick them, look at them as a bet for the week than not, especially at home. I thought Bernadeschi was pretty good for Toronto. Without Insigne, though, Toronto's not the same team. You know, again, Charlotte at home, they got that SEC football atmosphere at home with those home fans, man. You know, Charlotte at home, it's a different animal than Charlotte on the road. And in this case, Toronto had no chance walking into there without Insigne getting points in Carolina.
Yeah. And to me, it was just about Charlotte being surgical on a day where they're usually not. Abada, Aguimang, and Vargas with goals. I don't think I'm going to read that stat line many times this season with those three guys. And, you know, for Toronto, they were lucky to be in it themselves. Owusu with 2 shots, 2 goals. That's something you're not going to hear me read again. They're both unassisted only 45 minutes of play. So here you had the opposite, two teams that are not very surgical, who haven't been, you know, outperforming their expected goals this season, you know, really get after it. Combined, there was 2.5 expected goals. So, you know, that's exactly what my bet was. Turns out there were 5 on the day. I was wrong. It happens.
It does happen. There's actually one other thing that was kind of interesting about this game that I have been thinking about, and it's the last Charlotte goal. This one got called out a little bit by MLS media writers. I don't remember if it was Sam Jones or Matt Doyle, but specifically, they called out Bernadeschi's press because Bernadeschi presses high up the field, and the Charlotte player has a really easy pass up the line into a wide open player. And for me, though, I'm looking at Toronto's sort of breakout defense as this, you know, as this cross is cleared. And Bernadeschi is the only player who moves more than about 5 yards. Everybody else lumped in the middle. You actually have one of the defenders who, you know, bends over, hands on knees. I mean, this ball is live. He knows this ball is coming back and he is, you know, doubling over. I don't know if it's fitness. I don't know if it's, you know, mental exhaustion. But you could see after that ball goes in, you know, the Toronto players really, they didn't do enough to prevent it. But after it goes in, you can see the disappointment. You can see that they kind of were starting to believe that they had a chance. They didn't do enough to give themselves a chance, but they thought they did. So it's an interesting one. I do think this Toronto team is still getting better in a way. They're still healing. Their form has been bad. Bob, you said this a bunch. They're going to drop points. They're going to have big stretches this season where they drop games. They're not going to make the playoffs. That doesn't mean they're not still one of the most improved teams of the season. I think this is a multi-year project for this club. that John Herdman is working on to try and help them out. There's going to have to be players in, players out, and things like that. But I don't know. It's just it was something that's interesting.
Last week, we were so certain that Vancouver Whitecaps were going to be world busters, and I still think they're a very good team. But then putting four up on Toronto maybe wasn't as special as we made it seem on the show last week. You know, maybe Toronto is going to be a weak defense. I mean, that's 7 goals in 2 matches that they've given up. And the thing is, we talk about Insignia not being there, but if you score 2 goals away at Charlotte, you should expect a win. You know, these results are not good, but it's not because of the attacking. The results are not good because of the defense, which is a different assessment than what we thought. Insignia is not going to help there. Insignia is not tracking back and you know, playing defensive midfield. It's just not happening. This team is got worse, but not for the reasons we thought.
I think the one thing is, like, when you have an Insignia on the field, he helps you control the ball, right? So you play defense by not having to play defense. So there's something there, but he doesn't
help you. 55% of the ball.
Yeah, he doesn't help you in set piece situations. He doesn't help you in this situation. There's just got to be a little more, like, that defense just needs to be a little more mentally switched on. It's not that they have bad players. It's not that they're, like, necessarily losing their challenges or whatever. They're just not mentally switched on when they need to be. You know, being alert to the danger, recognizing that, hey, Bernadeschi's pressed high. He's my left wing back. And there's another player, you know, out there who is wide open and the ball could go there. And I should, I'm not marking anybody. So I should go out there and pick him up. That sort of just being switched on to that is something that high functioning teams do and low functioning teams slip up at. And Toronto is kind of a low functioning team.
I agree. Alex, any final thoughts for tonight?
You know, Champions Cup is out. Miami is now, what we talked about, now they'll be concentrating on some MLS games. They won't be dropping points. Mets will be around. Something to look forward to. You know, we have Olympic roster soon to be released. Looking forward to that. How many MLS guys are on that?
Tolkien looks set. He was the lone player at the media.
Yeah, some senior members may be on that team. Ricardo Pepe, I understand, may be on the team. Something to look forward to. I can't wait for that roster. Come on, I got 100 days to the Olympic team. That's something I'm looking forward to seeing the roster, who's going to Paris.
Love it. Make sure you go to thedesignatedpundits.com, youtube.com/thedesignatedpundits, at Bob V Sock. You can find me on there. Thank you, guys. Have a great night, and we'll catch up soon on Thursday when we bring you our weekend's predictions.